I think you got it anyway, but are you amazed was the first question. And if we're amazed by Jesus, how are we going to respond to Jesus? So the title that I put on the passage for today is Focused and Present. And I worried when I chose that video to use at the beginning that we might not be focused or present. But by God's grace, I think we were. And he was already speaking to us in there. Focused and present. But the passage we're looking at in Luke 16, 1 to 13, is normally called the Shrewd Steward. The Shrewd Steward. And I wonder whether we think Jesus is trying to commend the steward or not. We get very confused right at the beginning trying to work out what's happening with this guy. So before we read his story together, I want us to have a bit of a dramatic illustration. So I'm going to get two friends up here, and those two friends are going to be John and Eric. And the two of them, I think, are still good friends. And they are planning on taking a little walk together, okay? But they don't know this yet. There's a problem with their walk because there's going to be some muggers waiting for them, okay? Do we have anybody who wants to be a mugger? Okay, Simone's up there, so I think we should have a female team of muggers over at the back there. Somebody wants to be with Simone? Okay. We've got two worship leaders at the back there now as muggers. And can we have some muggers? Wait, we've got one. And can we have another mugger up the front? Okay. So we've got two muggers there. So I think if we get you to just go back a bit behind the speakers for the moment. Yep, they're lying in wait. So we will get our guys now to go for a little walk together. If you'd like to head into the middle area there.
You know, John, I was just thinking about that passage in Matthew 11.
And we're going to stop them there, because now they're going to realize they're not actually there yet, but they're suddenly going to realize there's muggers in front of them. And they turn around and they look and they find there's muggers behind them. So we're still on freeze frame for the muggers, because I wonder what they're going to do now. Let's watch and see what happens next. The muggers are going to stay still. What's going to happen with John and Eric? Okay, now the muggers can move in. It was real. That was quite clever of Eric, really, wasn't it? £200 debt he had. And he realised he was about to lose all the money that was on him. So he turns to John and says, you know that £200 I owe you?
Yeah, you are.
I'm paying back my debt to you now. Quick thinking. Would we commend Eric for that?
Yes.
It was quite clever, wasn't it? And he'd have felt quite pleased about it. But they may not have been quite such good friends afterwards, because John got back. Well, he was about to lose what he had, and now he was about to lose even more, because suddenly he had that debt paid back. Now, I've normally heard that told as a joke. You know, two people walking down the road, two muggers appear. What do they do? One says to the other, you know that debt I have to you? I'm paying it back. Let's listen to the Bible passage that we have today. and see what God says to us as we look at that. So Luke 16. I've tried to be brave. I reckon most sermons on this passage preach more to the end of the passage than the beginning. So I decided this time, or at least as I prayed, I felt I should try and speak more to the beginning of the passage than the end of it this time. So Luke 16, 1 to 13. Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling his affairs. One day a report came that the manager was wasting his employer's money. So the employer called him in and said, "What's this I hear about you? Get your report in order because you are going to be fired." The manager thought to himself, "Now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches and I'm too proud to beg. I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired." So he invited each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asked the first one, "How much do you owe him?" The man replied, "I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil." So the manager told him, "Take the bill quickly and change it to 400 gallons. "And how much do you owe my employer?" he asked the next man. "I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat," was the reply. "Here," the manager said, "take the bill and change it to 800 bushels. The rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. And it is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of the light. Here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then, when your earthly possessions are gone, they will welcome you to an eternal home. If you are faithful in the little things, you'll be faithful in the large ones. But if you are dishonest in the little things, you won't be honest with the greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? And if you are not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Okay, the shrewd steward, to be commended or not. Think back through the last few messages, and we've had this summary several times now. So what's been the main theme of Luke through chapters 15 and 16? We had what I would call the lost guests. Okay, there's going to be a great banquet, and the invitations have been sent out, but where were the guests? They were lost to other things, lost to other distractions. They weren't turning up. And then we had the lost sheep, and the importance of seeking out that one sheep. And the lost coin, and stop everything. Come on, help me search. I'm going to find the lost coin. And then last week, the lost sheep. The lost son. Your children do sound like sheep sometimes, but the lost son. And the importance of the father desperately waiting and hoping for his son to come back and to be fully restored. Lost guests, lost sheep, lost coin, lost son. And I think this one is still in the lost theme. So the lost theme that I have for us are big words, so we're going to pack it down and make it far more accessible to us, because I've said it's the lost crucial opportunity. And we're going to come back. We had the song, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, on which the Prince of Glory died," thinking about what our response will be. And that's very much what we're thinking about as we go through these verses. The lost crucial opportunity. Because effectively what Jesus has done in here has said the people of the world are wiser than my people. The people who hold my name up but who don't seem to do anything with it once they've held it up. So he's making heroes of the people that the audience don't want to hear being made heroes. Okay, it would be like standing here and saying, the heroes of this particular story are the bankers. Because of the way that they are very clever in organizing all the world's money. And he makes them a hero. That's what's happened in here. So I'm going to take a moment to step out of Bible verses to look at world things. Okay? Not politics. but business comments, because I quite like reading business books and so on. So one of them starts off saying this. A famous guy called Stephen Covey. He says, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Okay? Quite easy to get the hang of, really, isn't it? The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Because we so easily get distracted. But what is your main thing? Okay? What is your main thing? I can pick on a couple. Got a couple over here, and they can be staring into each other's eyes and telling each other that they are the main thing in their life. But if they're always off doing something completely different and never telling each other where they're going or what they're doing, you'll stop believing them. The main thing is to keep the main thing. If we say to somebody else, you are my main thing, you're the most important thing in the world to me, then we expect to be able to see it in the way that person lives. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So what is your main thing? Forgotten. I'm not sure. Hang on, it's your main thing. How can you not know what your main thing is? How can you keep your main thing the main thing if you don't know what the main thing is? Are you going to know if you've lost it? If it's your main thing, you won't discover a year later it's gone missing, because it's your main thing. It's what you're focused on and looking at all the time. So what is your main thing? I think our main thing is to fix our eyes on Jesus. Hebrews 12:2. Fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And that's what I wanted to try and help you do with that song at the beginning. We fix our eyes on Jesus. We're amazed by him. We say, as we're amazed, we want to make you our main thing. We want to respond to you in our daily lives. You're our main thing. So we have to keep our eyes on him. Keep the main thing the main thing. But actually, it's not so easy, is it? So, again, I'll pick up a couple of things from some kind of business or management books. So we could have this one. It says in the middle, the goal, focused and present to the task in hand. Okay, so we know what our main thing is. We want to focus on doing our main thing. That's in the circle in the middle. But the trouble is, we don't get around to it sometimes. So it says, before that circle, it says, procrastination prevents you from getting present to your work. You don't get there. You don't get to making the main thing because, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, I'm a bit tired today. There was a sketch that I was involved in doing, a little drama when I was a teenager, which was called Eternal Youth. And somebody hearing the gospel, and yeah, but I just want to live a bit. I've got my studies now, and I just want to, yeah, well, when I get a girlfriend, or when I'm married, or I'm too tired now because of the kids. When the kids get a bit bigger, or, well, when we're financially secure, or when my career's gone a bit further, then I'll respond to you, Jesus. I just need a bit longer before I get there. When the mortgage is paid off and it's a bit easier financially, and when my health gets better, and when I can find a care home that I feel a bit more comfortable in, and when I can get my thoughts back together again, and and they're dead before they've responded. Because we can always come up with excuses before we get to the main thing. But the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. But sometimes we made it the main thing, and then things come along and they distract us. And they pull us away from being focused and present on that main thing. And I think we live in a world where distraction is a bigger issue than ever. And we can talk that in a church situation, but just let me step out for a moment and think of the parable we read that really is talking about managers and business. And if I look at some of the books coming out in management now, there's one called Deep Work, because we fail to get on with our job and we're just answering bits and pieces all the time and we don't get to the actual work. So it's a book that tells you how to focus on the main thing and keep the main thing the main thing. And a book that talks about small habits revolution, all the things that keep you focused on how to make the main thing the main thing. Focus. Or another one, Wayne's doing quite well at this. He might shoot me afterwards for trying to give him as an example. But exercise, walking. There's a whole book there on the fact that sometimes going for a walk, getting your body moving, actually helps your brain wake up and move as well. Lots of things that help us work out in normal life for anybody to read how we keep focus and make the main thing the main thing. Because if it's your main thing, it's important to you to work out how to make it the main thing. So trying to go through that quick, but just reminding you of all the distractions we have. There's a screen there full of distractions. Your mobile phone. There's not too many come out yet. But it's there all the time. First thing lots of you will do when you wake up is pick up your mobile phone.
No.
Lots of you. I didn't say all of you. But it will immediately tell you what you're going to think about the second after you woke up. If that's the first thing that you pick up. Or when you're at work and you're just constantly watching your email, somebody else is telling you what you're going to think about and what you're going to do with every minute of your day. Because you're letting them, the moment they send you something, dictate what you're doing with your day. Oh, I've got some free time, so I'm going to binge watch Netflix. And hours of your time have gone to something else that you've chosen to fill your mind with. Other streaming services are available. Or food. Lots of us will have food as a distraction. Oh, I want to get on with something, but I'm just going to go and eat something first, and then something else and something more. Just our diary, or let's face it, at the end of the day, other people are so easily a distraction to us the whole time. And if we let them be a distraction, then we're not keeping the main thing the main thing. So I'm going to go through this very quick because I think this can help us. But the first of those books that I mentioned talks about a thing called the eudaimonia machine. And this was a psychologist who was looking at how to use psychology to help people focus on their job at work. So he redesigned the whole office. In his head. He didn't actually physically build it. Other people have then tried to build it afterwards. And he reckoned when you go into your workplace, you should go through an area first that is called the gallery. And the gallery would be kind of setting the vision. It would be telling you what the company is about and filling your eyes with those purpose statements or the pictures of the achievements and so on, so that you're saying, wow, this is what I'm part of as you walk in. And then you get into an area that he called the saloon, which is where you meet everybody and you do the catch-up and there's all that buzz of interaction as you do the company stuff in there. But you can't get work done in there. So then you go into another area that's called the library, which is where all the resources are, the things that you need or the latest reports and information on how to do your job. And when you're through that, you get into an area called the office space, which is where the copy machines are or some of the computers and so on, different things, or the secretaries and the assistants, different people that might help you as resources. But actually, the place where you do the work is a quiet space at the end of all of that. And we think that when we just walk into the workplace, we walk through the door and we're ready for work. And he said, no, you actually would do better if you went through these stages first. Now, why do I bother to bore you with a business analogy like that? Because I think that applies to our worship. And you could even be really clever and say it should apply to our church buildings. But we don't have to do it in a building if we can do it in our pattern of worship. So we've done that today. The worship time is part of the gallery that we come into, where we have God lifted high. And we hear about the things that he's done for other people. And we get different exhortations made to us about what we're about. And we get the buzz of fellowship. We had that hopefully during the mealtime and the interaction that we have there. And the notices, well, I'm going to say I hope that they're part of the library and telling us what resources are there for us and different ways that we can get help in doing our task. Because we're trying to get to the place, the chamber space, where we are one-to-one with God and we're letting the deep work happen. So, another example of how business might get it right and how that could affect the physical setup in different things. So I want to ask you, how do you keep your responding to Jesus at the center of your life? How do you keep your responding to Jesus at the center of your life? Now, if you wake up and you pick up your mobile phone, I don't think the next thing that will happen will necessarily be a strike of lightning. But you've missed an opportunity. The first thought that went into your head wasn't a chance for God to say good morning to you, this is my world, this is where my heart is. It's the latest text message. So you might want to wait a bit longer and to pick up his word first, or to have that little bit of prayer time first, or to go for a walk outside first to make sure you're awake and let God speak to you from other things. How do you keep your responding to Jesus at the center of your life? You've heard people talk about devotions or quiet time. And so often we can hear that and we can kind of think it's like a law that we have to obey. It's a, I must do this in a legalistic way. But it's about keeping Jesus as the focus, giving him a chance to speak into your life before other things distract you and take you somewhere else. How do you keep on thinking about your response to Jesus? It's a question for all of us wherever we are at. If you're here kind of conscious that you think God is there and you're not quite sure where you are with him or what you should do about it, yeah, but in another year I'll make an answer or I'll do something. Why? Why not make the main thing the main thing? If God is really there, if he's really the creator God, if he really has an interest in you personally, why not respond to that now? Why not make it your main thing? Why not get right with him? If you know that Jesus has saved you, you know that your sins are forgiven, but you just don't know how to face the next few days or what to do to change your life, having come to that place of faith, is it worth saying, well, I'll wait and see and I'll think about it later? Or do you not want to make that your main thing and work out how you will respond to it? And if you've been a Christian for some time, boy, you've had an awful lot of distractions since you became a Christian. So what are you doing in your daily habits and your patterns of living to make sure you are keeping the main thing the main thing? Because if we don't, we could have been the lost guest who didn't turn up for the meal, or the lost sheep who's gone astray and Jesus has had to go out to find him, or the lost son who's gone through a tough experience and got defiant and then walked off and now can't easily find his way back And when he does, he's scared of what will happen. But we've got that invitation to come. We don't want to stay the lost son when Jesus is ready to welcome us back. I said I'd focus on the beginning of the passage and not the end. So I invite you to go back and read the end of the passage again, because it does talk about money. And I can talk about in Matthew, where your heart is, there your treasure is also. And I think that's the one that really applies to these verses. The things that you value most become our main thing. We put them in the center. I can talk about the we can't serve two masters. If you let other things distract you all the time, then that becomes your master. Keep the main thing the main thing. So I have to finish, because otherwise you'll be distracted by time. But I invite you as you go away to reflect. For we are the workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we would walk in them. And I'm going to read two other verses, but maybe you'd just like to bow your heads in prayer as I read them. And then we'll hand back to the worship group. So as we're praying, as we're thinking about how we respond to God, as we make a choice about whether we want to make him our main thing, it says in Romans, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is the good, acceptable, and perfect. And lastly, in Philippians 1:6, and if you're feeling weak, then I give this to you as a particular encouragement as you think about how you respond. It says this, I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in me and in you will bring it to completion at the day of Christ Jesus. But let's keep him the main thing from now till then.